Welcome to the 96th episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. Give me another one. Ooh, yes. I am one half of your hosts, Quizmaster Mark Davis, and adjacent to me on a computer screen, my co-host,
Quizmaster Lee.
Now you know how it feels.
Ooh, on the spot.
I can't tell how much of that was lag and how much of that was you just waiting in anticipation.
A little bit of column A, column B.
There you go. There you are.
Yes.
And this week, oh boy, we've got a real treat for you.
Yes, we do.
We have a guest. Because once we're on that train, we can't stop.
That guest is Seth.
Hey-o!
What's up, buddy?
Watch the Sealum fans go round in the Mark Davis dungeon.
Seth, first things first, the hi-hat room.
Yes. Okay.
Let's just get right into it.
Man, we're just diving
the
right
hi-hat
in.
I need to know.
You haven't even tried to warm me up before you.
No, has been burning on my mind. Like, I had no idea. This seems like a fact that I would have heard from you if I would have guessed that anybody would know this.
Okay.
Because you give historic tours in Fort Myers, downtown Fort Myers. You are a many generations resident, native son of this area of Southwest Florida.
Yes.
How many generations?
I have 7 in Florida, 4 in Fort Myers.
Okay. The Hi-Hat Room, I've never heard of this place before.
And to be completely honest with you, neither had I.
Hmm.
But after I actually just referencing back, so anybody that missed last week's episode, it had to do with Dallas asked a question about the counterfeit Queen of Soul, a young girl from Virginia,
Name
Jones, who it was a really good question. It had to do with she sounded just like Aretha Franklin, and a promoter had heard her voice and decided to go around and pass her off as Aretha Franklin to different little theaters in the South and kind of make money. Obviously, it's a scam, and she was outed, or the whole scenario was outed, the whole scheme was outed by a review of her performance at a place in Fort Myers called the Hi-Hat Club. And I didn't know the answer to the question when he asked it, but I had read about this. It was in a Smithsonian article before, and I never paid attention to the fact that it was in Fort Myers. What I thought was strange was that I went back and read the Smithsonian article, and in the article they had said that it was the Hi-Hat Room in the Hi-Hat Club in Fort Myers, and that it was a 1,400 person theater, which I found unusual because
a lot of people.
There in 1969 in the African American sections of Fort Myers, which is where this would have taken place, I don't think that there were any 1,400 seat rooms or theaters. The only place that we could guess would be McCollum Hall, which is on the corner of Cranford and MLK. Back then it was called Anderson. That would have been probably the only place. And I did check back with some local historians if the Hi-Hat Room had possibly at one time existed in that location, but definitely wouldn't have held 1,400 people. However, another part of the article mentioned that the manager of the Hi-Hat Room was a gentleman named Clifford Hart. Which does make sense. There was a gentleman here who lived for many, many years. He was from Fort Myers. His name was Clifford Hart. And I did some background research on him, and I do believe he's the father of our former police chief, Larry Hart. I tried to get calls and do confirmations on these things, because when you bring up Fort Myers history, I am going to dig. It's just something I'm going to do.
This guy's an excavator.
Well, yes, but when it comes to that, I'm definitely going to take my time. And I didn't get any solid answers back. One day I hope to provide you with solid answers.
This kind of makes me wonder, I was just talking to someone about some videos that I posted on Facebook in which I referred to the Sanctuary Skate Park as IFB Skate Park. Because whenever Nevin would put shows on there, and people that owned IFB Records, which was their record label for putting out Jayuna's stuff, et cetera, et cetera, They would always refer to it as IFB, even though it went by another name. So I'm kind of wondering if maybe it was McCollum Hall, but this guy, you know, thinking, oh, McCollum Hall doesn't sound cool. So for the purposes of me booking this show, I'm going to call it the Hi-Hat Room because that's got like a nice slick name to it.
Highly, highly likely that that's probably what happened. I have no doubt that that's probably what happened. I had discussed this for a moment, and we decided to save our conversations about this for the podcast. But I did discuss this for a bit with Mark, and it did this whole event did remind me of some things, and that's that you know, this was a like they said, counterfeit Queen of Soul, a fake Aretha Franklin that they were talking about, and it got me to thinking in the article, it said that all of the shows that had taken place took place in small Fort Myers towns, and of course the ones that were listed in the article were in 1969, very small. Fort Myers was still very small. Bradenton, very small. Ocala, still a very small town. And they really didn't have any shows in the bigger cities where she probably would have been recognized. But this also got me thinking about in a long time ago, I wanted to go see some events that happened in Fort Myers. In 1996, Old Dirty Bastards record came out, The Return to the 36 Chambers. And I had seen an advertisement here in town for Old Dirty Bastard was going to play at the Armory, which was a place right near Terry Park in Fort Myers. And I was like, that just doesn't make sense that, you know, he wouldn't be playing in Fort Myers. And I went to the show, and they did bring out, it was a big show and it was a big deal, and that they did bring out essentially what amounted to a fake Old Dirty Bastard. And he was, you know, and everybody kind of booed him off stage, but people were, they were there more for the party, I think. But however, by the end of that show, they did bring out another somewhat well-known rapper. And this was 1996, and I'll never forget the guy when he walked on the stage. I didn't know who he was, but many years later, I knew it was Mystical.
Wow.
In 1996. Yeah, it was at the Armory in Fort Myers. And that also happened again. I think it was in 2002. Pyramids in Fort Myers had advertised that Trick Daddy was going to be there. And I'm a big Trick Daddy fan. So I took my now wife, then new girlfriend, Jennifer, and we went and saw it. And lo and behold, never saw not any hint of Trick Daddy being there. However, at one point the DJ did yell, we have Trick Daddy over in VIP, and you know, but everybody once again seemed to just be there for the party, so they didn't really pay attention to the fact that Trick Daddy was not actually there. Basically just ploys to get people to show up and spend money.
Right.
So I think that there's a long history of this, probably in the South more than other places.
They did say though that she sounded remarkably like Aretha Franklin, and even I think I read that she was, or maybe Dallas mentioned this, I can't remember, but she was impersonated herself. Somebody was impersonating her later on in her career.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah.
I didn't read that part, but yes, it did say in the article that she did sound remarkably like Aretha Franklin. And when she came out, they had put a big wig on her and more makeup just in case people saw her and said, that's not Aretha Franklin.
Yeah,
However, in the article, it said when she started singing, everybody said, you know, hey, that's Aretha Franklin.
I think it was the Fort Myers show specifically where people saw her up close and were like, that's not her. But then as soon as she started singing, they were like, she sounded so much like her. They were like, well, I guess the pictures I've seen or whatever must have been wrong or something, because
Doctor.
That is her. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see how the information trickles down from, like, I think Dallas said, today I learned that YouTube channel is where he heard about this, and then going and cross-referencing that with the Smithsonian article, and then it coming back to the place of origin, Fort Myers. And now here we are on our podcast asking Seth, like, what is going on here? Is this, right. Is this true? And Seth is doing firsthand research.
Very neat.
Man, if I hear somebody say Fort Myers, I have to jump all over it.
Well, Seth, we love, you know, your extensive knowledge of Fort Myers as well as other topics, which we will be quizzing you on today. We have a variety of questions, for you. Thank you.
I feel like all my relationships since March have taken place over Zoom.
Yeah.
You know, so here we
it's
are.
It's probably
we're
gonna, true.
Yeah. We're Zooming. We're Zooming.
We are.
How about we go over a weekly wrap up? We had a very busy week with live trivia.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Okay. On Monday, April 27th, we had No Nonsense Trivia Challenge on Twitch. quiz number 23. We had 36 player teams in the house. Explosive Jedi, David Holbrook took that quiz with 59,352 points. Grantastic Glenn and Propofol Princess coming in second place that quiz. Then we followed that up with quiz 24. We had 33 players for that. Grantastic Glenn getting the victory that time with 134,763 points. Propofol Princess and Apple 30309 in second place for that. And then we tried out a little audio round. I wasn't too good at synchronizing the audio clips and the buttons. I know that there was some like moments where there's only like 2 seconds of audio. So, you know, we're going to work on that in the future. We have to like synchronize that manually. But Propofol Princess took that one, and David Holbrook, Explosive Jedi, jockeying for the last man standing position there at the end. It was a knockout style quiz. So we'll probably do some more of those. If you have any music genres or audio quiz genres to request, just let me know. We'll try to get that going.
He has vaulted, I'll tell you, from listener. He's never been to any of my events or any of your events. And then all of a sudden, you know, especially with you know, this virtual trivia that we've been doing, now all of a sudden he has just jumped head first. Mm-hmm. And he's a really good musician. He plays a variety of instruments and stuff too.
Where's he from?
He lives in Estero. He was one of my employees. And is dating one of my favorite employees of all time, Marissa, who is one of our Patreon subscribers. So
I'd just like to add also, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, please do.
That ever since this started, you're seeing no-nonsense listeners from all over the world show up at the games, and that is so awesome to see, especially when you see people from different countries. We've had people from Australia, we've had people from Great Britain, which of course I'm all giddy about. I'm a huge Anglophile and love anything British. But it's just, it's so odd to be playing against, you know, people that are in different parts of the world, and they, you know, and they're no people. This is a no community worldwide, brother.
It's been very neat.
We even had three different Colombians on Thursday night. We had somebody from the District of Columbia playing, Columbia, one of the Carolinas, I think, and then also somebody from the country of Columbia.
Wow.
So that's just incredible, I think. Mark, you had Zoom trivia on Wednesday. That was a fun time.
Correction. We had Zoom trivia on Wednesday.
Very fun.
Thank you again. I had a very, very good time. It seemed like you were having a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Co-hosting. Good.
Yeah, absolutely. And we had a nice little mixed bag. We had the first round was won by As You Wish, which was Elise. I don't know if Dallas was on her team or not, but she took the first round by 1 point. We had a 1 point spacing between first, second, and third place in the first round. Second round was won by Kyle Ann, your wonderful wife.
Wonderful
who just,
wife.
Like, eviscerated the second round. But the third round, of course, went to Peanut the Dog, unironically owns a Gadsden flag, with 77 points. Almost a perfect round. They just missed the first question of the last round and knocked it out of the park.
I feel like they had players trickling in through the quiz. Like, their numbers grew, you know?
Yes.
It started with, like, two players, and then by the end of it, they were at full strength.
Yeah, that'll happen, too. I mean, they still got people in school and stuff.
They were forming, like, Voltron.
Exactly.
The midst of it, yeah.
Yep.
First, it's just the Black Lion. Then you throw in, like, the green and blue. Then
by the
red
end,
and
you
yellow.
Got all the color spectrum.
Then they form Voltron, the sword comes, and it's all over.
On Thursday, April 30th, we were back on Twitch. We had quiz 25, 29 players. John Lewis, former guest on the show, Trivia Bachelor Party episode, 101,120 points, his first no-nonsense victory. Arnfield and Pandarar coming in second and third place, respectively, for that quiz. And then quiz number 26, we had 34 players. Apple 30309 winning that one with 196,871 points. Now our new 10th highest score that we've done on the stream. Valkia and John Lewis coming in second and third place, respectively, for that. Congrats to them. Congrats to our other winning teams. And thanks to all for quizzing. If you want to play No Nonsense Trivia in the coming weeks, you can do so by visiting twitch.tv/No Nonsense Trivia, where we will be streaming on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern until further notice. Don't forget, you can play Nice Guys Pizza Trivia live with Mark Davis on Wednesdays at 8 p.m. on Zoom. You can find the link to that on the Nice Guys Pizza page or in the show notes of this episode. And to stay updated on the topics for tonight and Thursday's quizzes, be sure to join us on social media. No Nonsense Trivia on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, and Twitch. Join us.
Won't you?
Hot damn, that one might actually sound pretty good, guys.
Yeah, that sounds like it might have been okay.
Yeah. All right, let's take a little break and get into some trivia.
Sounds good.
We're back. Mark, do you want to kick off round one with some trivia for me and Seth?
I would love to. Another one of those that I don't know if it's going to be easy or not, so I'm just going to throw it out to you, gentlemen.
I love when you put the curse out like that at the beginning. Yeah.
You know, I guess it is kind of a curse. I apologize. But I have a feeling that you guys got this. Mm-hmm. Question number one, what waterway was known as the Ice Curtain during the Cold War?
The ice curtain. Could it be like the Bering Sea? You know, Bering Sea is in between Alaska and Russia.
Okay,
and it is often frozen over, especially in the '80s when we didn't have the prominence of global warming, of climate change that we have now. There's that. There's also the what's that passage up through the Hudson Bay? That area through the Hudson Bay
that goes
north of Canada. Yeah, well, you know, the Hudson Bay's in Canada, mm-hmm. and then there's a passage that goes through it that I don't think you could make it all the way. I think we'd probably be better off with
that's much further
the Bering
away.
Sea. Mm-hmm. Or the Bering Straits.
That's kind of where I was thinking, because I just didn't know the name of it, but I was like, okay, it could be anywhere from inside the Pacific Ocean, probably, you know, going up, going north.
I think that's probably
if that's the Bering Sea, the Bering Strait, are those the same thing?
Well, yes, essentially it is.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the Bering Straits in the Bering Sea.
I feel good about that.
I do too. I think we should. I think that's what we're going to go with. Are we locked in here?
Indeed.
The correct answer is the Bering Strait. Yes.
All right. There you go. Yes. Very good. Bering Strait.
Boy, I'm glad Absolutely. To have Seth the sus with this week.
I did think that because Seth was with you that that was going to be a little bit easier. So that was basically the dividing line between America and Russia during the Cold War.
I can see Russia from my house.
Exactly. So the Bering Strait was...
The Ice Curtain. Or was that
yes.
what it was called?
The Curtain? The Ice Curtain. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. Seth, will you bring us a question?
If you are presbyopic, what is wrong with you?
Can you spell it?
Yes. Presbyopic, mm-hmm. PRESBYOPIC. And as an added hint, the condition is called presbyopia.
I'm going to ask you to spell it one more time. I'm sorry. PRES.
PRESBYOPIC.
Hmm. Here's my idea, Mark. So myopic means like singularly focused, biopic, two things looking, two things seeing, biopic, presbyopic. Maybe this is a medical condition. I'm sorry, you said it was a medical condition?
Well, so, I didn't say that. I said what is wrong with you.
What is wrong with you? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So biopic, when I think biopic – like two, it's B-I, but this is B-Y.
But I did add to it as a hint. The condition is called presbyopia.
Yeah, I still think it's. I don't know.
Could it be that you're Presbyterian?
Hey, I thought that too.
My God, Mark, you got it.
What is wrong with you? See, that's, I don't know. I don't want to be too judgmental here, you know, and say something
real
wrong.
Affliction.
Like start suggesting things and say, like, that's what's wrong with you.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, but
so I mean, it could be could be double vision.
I was thinking that maybe, you know, I'm not sure what the medical term is for this, but lazy eye, you know, something like that.
I like how Seth says, "What is wrong with you?"
Yeah,
such a funny, you know, it's so funny.
What
when you're
the
writing,
hell is wrong with you when you got this condition?
When you're writing questions and you're trying to think of like a tactful like way to put stuff, you know, it's like. Do I want to just say what's wrong with you in case somebody's like, nothing's wrong with me, asshole. I'm presbyotic.
Fair criticism.
Or presbyopic.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It really is.
Depending on what the answer is.
No, it all comes into the answer. It's great.
Okay. Mark, what do you think? Should we go with...
Well, he says it has something that all goes in with the answer.
Oh, I gave away a little bit. I'm sorry. Shouldn't have done that. But you're talking about it. I'm hearing you suss, and it's make me smile.
So I don't know. I don't know what he means by that. It all goes into the answer. That is cryptic.
it is.
What if
that's why I ignored it. I was like, that hint is so cryptic, I don't even want to think about it.
What if it's you look too deeply into stuff?
Like you over-suss?
Yeah. Or like overthink.
Ah, that's clever, Mark. That's very clever.
I mean, optic, you know, looking.
Yep.
Looking
and myopic
too deep.
Is like your, you know, narrow track.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So there's a relationship there. I like it. You overthink.
You wanna
things.
Go with that?
Yep.
All right, we're going to go with overthinking.
Wrong. Oh, yeah, there you go. Go ahead and hit it. Okay. All right. But just the suss on this was fantastic because you're all dancing around it and it all has to do with the answer. And this is what I have written for my answer. And the short answer is it means you're getting old. And it does have a little bit to do with everything that you're talking about. And this is what presbyopic is. Farsightedness caused by loss of elasticity in the lens of the eye occurring typically in middle age or old age. So now you have to wear reading glasses or hold things at arm's length to read them. Also known as the aging eye condition, a.k.a. Seth needs cheaters.
Ah, yes.
I see.
How perfect. Mm-hmm. And I wish I would have gotten. I'm glad we're recording this because you could see him.
You guys had mentioned
holding,
I went meta every once in a while,
holding the phone while he's talking about holding things at arm's length. That is a perfect, yeah. The perfect yes, beautiful.
As I hold things,
great
up to my very
yes.
high powered reading glasses,
monofocals.
Yes.
All right, guys.
It's time for me and Mark Davis to double up on a guy
All right,
named Lee.
Seth.
Yep. This is a question similar in format, but different subject matter. Prehistoric animals is the category.
Okay.
The Smilodon is a prehistoric creature more commonly known by what name?
Oh, I've heard this.
The Smilodon.
Smilodon. Prehistoric creature.
Is it? It's jumping into my head that it's like the Allosaurus or something like that. Like, not necessarily like Smile would, you know, put you off and make you think, it's one of the nice creatures like a Brontosaurus or a, you know, or a Stegosaurus, you know, one of the plant eaters. Smilosaurus, like, would, I think it's, for some reason, a meat eater jumps into my head like an Allosaurus or a Spinosaurus. Not a Spinosaurus, but
what
I think
about. A saber-toothed tiger.
That's it.
You think so?
I think that's it. Yeah, I'm like, now that you just said that. But yeah, like I said, a meat eater.
A Don?
Yeah, but that is a prehistoric animal.
Well, he didn't say dinosaur, and I don't know if that's because it's he wants to keep it open or because it's not necessarily.
Can you read
a
the question one more time just to make sure?
Sure thing. The Smilodon is a prehistoric creature more commonly known by what name?
He didn't say dinosaur. It's a meat eater, and it's what you just said, saber-toothed tiger. I'm now that when you said that, it triggered something in me. I'm triggered. Yeah, I think that's it.
I think we're going to go with saber-toothed tiger.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Good. Very good.
Well, you know, I don't know why, but with Don, I was thinking, like, maybe that's like a dinosaur thing. But then I thought Mastodon, and I was like, oh, well, yeah. Mastodon mm-hmm. isn't a dinosaur, so we should be in the clear.
Right.
That is a beautiful sus.
Thank you.
It was. I felt
good about it. All right, here's your second question. After nearly a year and a half of negotiations, an agreement was reached for Benny Gantz to share power with what political leader in their country?
A year and a half?
Yes.
Of negotiations.
Yes.
Benny Gantz.
Okay. My guess would be that it's not an Asian country. Doesn't sound like an Asian name.
But as established, Mark loves throwing curveballs like that.
Oh, of course.
And
yeah,
picking things that don't sound like they would, you know, to play on your stereotypes as a player.
And you have to think what countries would have power sharing. That's a rare thing. That really is a rare thing when you come to when you talk about governing. You know, the vast majority of countries for the longest time just had absolute power, and there wasn't any sort of checks and balances really until, you know, 1700, 18th century. Well, I mean, you throw Greece in there, but that's and Rome, but
well,
still.
Mark, you didn't give us a year or time period.
This is a current events.
Okay, current events. Okay. So who's had some political strife over the past year and a half that would be in this position?
Like everybody.
Yeah, but yeah. but that would be in a position of you know, power sharing. Could it be India, actually? Isn't Modi a very controversial leader over there?
He is very controversial.
And there's like some questions about his, I haven't looked into this, but in my sus here, I think there's been some questions about his political victories and votes and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I think we're starting to veer into despots when we talk about guys like him. His power is becoming a little bit more absolute. You know, Modi, I don't think he's really that the group that he's associated with. I can't remember the name of the Indian party that he's associated with that, you know, they kind of given him absolute power, kind of like, you know, Duterte.
Philippines. Off. He's got a very, but I don't know why I thought I maybe remembered something about India, but maybe I'm wrong. I
don't think it's him. Okay. I don't think it's him. Gantz, you know, Gantz sounds almost like German.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of German sounding names in places like Israel, in South America. It might be Israel. Is anybody power sharing alongside Netanyahu at the moment?
Well, he's.
Could that be?
He's been under severe internal pressure, I know.
Yeah. He's been under a lot of scrutiny lately.
So that could be, it's possible.
Israel, maybe. Maybe.
A year and a half? The math kind of lines up.
Maybe. I mean, I can't think of any other, you know, I can't think of any Western European countries that have gone through, you know, serious political turmoil. I mean, save like Greece. Greece had, you know, back in the late 2000s, they had to deal with austerity and their government was shaky. You know, we got places like Venezuela, where they in the past 15 years have always seemed to be on the edge of some sort of political turmoil.
That was going to be my other guess, is Venezuela.
Venezuela? Mm-hmm. Maybe.
I like Israel, though.
Israel
That's a good guess.
You want to go with that?
Yeah.
All right. Why not?
Well, the question is sharing power with what political leader in their country?
Oh, Benjamin Netanyahu.
Netanyahu. That's who we got to go with.
Yep.
Guys, great fucking sus. That's great.
Really? Oh.
Fantastic. Nice. Damn. That was a work of art.
Damn. That was awesome.
We went around the world on that one.
Yeah. Literally. I mean, discussion-wise.
Yep.
Started with Asia, went to Germany. Talked about Venezuela. You've hit almost every fucking continent.
Almost every continent, yeah. If we know who the ruler of Antarctica is, we might have talked about him, too.
We'll find out one day.
One day, yeah.
I think her name is Joey.
Yeah, no kidding. Our good friend Tim Clark's lovely wife, Joey, spent a lot of time in Antarctica with some sort of like a Burger King research station or something like that, wasn't it? I don't know.
That's where the kingdom is.
How ground beef cooks at a certain latitude.
That's where they dig up all their fries.
Here's my next question for you guys. lots of cities in the U.S. started off as military forts, like Fort Amsterdam, which is now Manhattan. Also, the Alamo, which is now San Antonio, or it's still in San Antonio, but San Antonio grew around it. What southeastern U.S. city was once Fort Dallas?
What southeastern U.S. city?
That is correct.
Fort Dallas. I don't know.
Well, yeah.
I don't know. Fort Dallas. So Dallas
is this
was
even sussable?
I'll make it just a tad bit easier.
Okay.
What major U.S. southeastern city was once Fort Dallas?
Well, that kind of narrows it down, you know, could be.
It does. Atlanta,
Miami.
Orlando, Tallahassee. I mean, when you think of major, you think of capitals, first of all, and then major metropolitan areas after that.
Right. Tampa. Could Fort Lauderdale have been Fort Dallas before? They don't change the name of forts, really, though, do they?
I don't think so.
Well, it's a fort, always a fort.
I mean, Fort Myers was called something else. I learned that. But I kind of don't think it was Fort Lauderdale. I don't think it's major enough.
True.
Southeastern.
It's not going to be Miami, right?
I mean, I would say Miami would be more of a, I don't know, are ports and forts a different thing? I mean, like, Miami's right on the water.
I
guess Fort Myers is too.
If you have Fort Lauderdale, you're not going to name the next one over Fort Dallas. You know, it's probably going to have a Spanish name or, you know, an indigenous name. Whereas something like forts are on the water, you know, frequently.
Well, we're also going, you know, Florida specific here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, southeastern could be Georgia. It could be South Carolina. it could be Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
It could be, you know, Tennessee. Pick a fucking city, man. You know,
this is tough.
I mean,
what do we know about Dallas? It is a city in Texas.
That's it. It is also a
summer friend of ours.
And yes, he is also a friend of ours. Well, we can also look at this.
Mm-hmm.
The last question had to do, and this is me getting into people's brains, but the last question had to do with something specific to us busting Seth's balls about.
Mm-hmm.
That was related to the podcast.
Right.
So I wonder if this references something, and he's very, very excited about these questions,
mm-hmm.
which tells me that this might be related to something. and the answer might be related to something that we reference all the time in the podcast or reference with Seth.
Mm. Playing a bit of cat and mouse, you think?
Yes. Yeah. He would make a good villain.
Oh, well, how nice it is to have a worthy adversary, right?
Indeed. Can you think of any cities? Now, I mean, I guess Dallas could just be the reference to the podcast.
Like it was Fort Dallas and now it's just known as Dallas. That's not Southeastern, though. Right?
Yeah, I don't think I'd consider that Southeastern.
New Orleans? I'm trying to think of like maybe cities that are kind of close to Texas. You know, maybe it's the same Dallas, like running around doing things, different parts of the country, but kind of close.
Man, if it was Dallas, that would be very funny.
Mm-hmm.
But Southeastern?
That would definitely qualify. I think anytime an answer is mentioned in the question prompt, automatically trick question. Not that there's anything wrong with that necessarily, but I try to avoid those. Like, so I don't know.
I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I don't know, man. You want to go with Dallas?
No, he just said he wouldn't do that.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that's definitely not it.
You never pay attention to me, Mark.
Yeah. Tallahassee, I don't remember. I lived in Tallahassee. I don't remember that. This could be the second time. Well, no, I guess the last time that was mentioned was in regards to the counterfeit Aretha Franklin. You were asking me if I remember the hi-hat club, right, or hi-hat room in Tallahassee. I just don't remember ever hearing Fort Dallas in my time there. So I don't think it's that. It's got to be on the water. I got to imagine. Let's either go with, what do you think, New Orleans or Tampa?
Let's go with...
I don't think I've ever heard it about Tampa either, now that I'm saying it out loud.
All right, and let's go with New Orleans.
New Orleans. Oh, no.
Wrong. Yeah. Okay. The sus was good from the beginning. You guys did a fantastic job of it. Just came up a little bit short. You were close with Tampa. Tampa was actually originally called Fort Brooke. Ooh. Fort Dallas was located on the banks in 1836 when it was constructed of the Miami River. It's Miami.
Wow. Yeah.
If just so y'all guys know, at one point there was a series of wars that took place in Florida, and they were called the Seminole Wars, mm-hmm. The first one taking place in 1820, and then another one after that. And Fort Myers, where we live, or where most of us, we live close to it, or if not in it, was actually a Seminole War fort. And there were literally dozens and dozens of other forts constructed all over Florida. As a matter of fact, if you do the numbers, at one point, Florida probably had more forts than any other state. There were tons of them. Fort Delaney was at Punarassa. Fort Thompson's, LaBelle, Fort Danaude in between. Fort Ogden's still there. Fort Meade in the middle of the state. These are all places that are still there. And there were tons and tons of them in the middle of the Everglades that have since been like reclaimed by the woods. But Fort Dallas constructed in 1836 for the Seminole Wars. It's Miami.
I'm so mad at myself. Mark, I'm sorry. Like, I did that thing where I said, no, it's not that, for like no reason. I had no knowledge of it.
I'm sorry, too. I should have just taken it and
I don't apologize for something you didn't know. I mean,
it's not about not knowing, but. You know, I wrote off. I was like, Miami. Now they wouldn't do that. They would keep the name, right, the original name. There was no reason for me to say
Fort Lauderdale.
That. Yeah,
you were not Riley. Far.
Yep,
give it to us.
My last question for you guys is a famous author's question. Famous authors.
Ooh.
Norton Juster is known for writing what 1961 children's novel about a boy named Milo and his watchdog named Tock?
What?
Norton Juster is known for writing what 1961 children's novel about a boy named Milo and his watchdog named Tock?
Wow. All right.
What his dog's name? Can you spell it?
T-O-C-K.
So something to do with tick? I have no idea.
There is nothing about this question that is ringing any bells in my head.
Yeah.
Nothing. 1961, children's novels.
Can I give you a slightly easier version of this question? Maybe it has a little hint
please.
In it.
Please.
Okay, yeah, because I got nothing at all.
Right now, my best guess is Tox Ticks.
Norton Juster is known for writing what 1961 children's novel, which is celebrated for its extensive use of wordplay and is about a boy named Milo and his watchdog named Tok.
Celebrated for its extent. He's indicating that this is something that we're going to know. We're going to go, oh. You said novel, right? It's
yes.
Not like a Dr. Seuss picture book.
It's a chapter book.
Chapter book.
Did you guys see the video of that guy rapping?
Yes.
Fox and Socks?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Holy yeah. Shit.
That was neat.
I like Walk It In My Pocket. If you've ever seen that rap along, that's a good one too.
Yeah.
Set to Walk It Like I Talk It.
Norton Uster. 1961, a boy named Milo and his dog Talk.
Norton Wordplay. Juster with a J.
Norton Juster. Oh, that helps. Oh, I thought you said Uster. Now I know it.
Wordplay.
Did you say it was his watchdog?
Mm-hmm.
See, there's something there with like TikTok, watchdog. You know, there's something there. Mm-hmm. We're just going to have to come up with a pun and hope that's the name.
My dog Talk. I don't know. This is a. Man, this one I'm completely and totally drawing a blank on. And I can't, I mean, it would help if I could think of a children's novel written in the early 60s, but I just can't. I can't think of any. You know, when I think of early 60s novels, I'm thinking of, you know, Catcher in the Rye. Well, actually, that was 50s. I think Catcher in the Rye was 50s. And that's not a children's novel, really. I mean, other than in the book, kids are going off the edge of a cliff. And Holden's catching them in the rye, hence the name. I can't think of any other names of children's books from that time. I got nothing.
We just got to come up with some kind of wordplay for watchdog, talk, TikTok, something, you know, it's going to be something like that, I think.
And we're probably going to know it when he says it.
Oh, I'm not going to fucking know this. If I did, I think by now I'd be like, oh, yeah, because that name. Because, you know, puns like that will stick with you. But I think we're just going to have to basically just, you know.
I got a bail on this one. I can't even think of anything.
Milo and TikTok.
Wrong. That is wrong.
Yeah.
Now, the name doesn't have a pun related to that in it, but I'm guessing you've probably heard of it. The novel's called The Phantom Toll Booth.
I've heard of it, but I don't know anything about it.
Never heard of it at all.
I've heard of it, but I don't know anything about it.
It was assigned reading for me in middle school, and I think it was actually created an early interest in wordplay for me personally. Actually,
okay.
He goes to this place called the Doldrums, which is very gray and unexpressive, but it's like a physical location on a map that he goes to. There's just a lot of little features of wordplay in the book. So I didn't know if you guys had read it, but it's something that I hadn't thought about in quite some time.
No.
Huh. I've never heard of that. I'll have to check it out.
Now we got.
Don't worry. They'll make a 3D animated movie soon.
You know what?
Maybe I'll be subjected to it. They'll get like Vanilla Ice to do a rap song over the, the trailer, the Phantom Toll Booth.
There's some other washed up rapper. Young MC, the Phantom Toll Booth.
Tell you what, let's take a break. I'll read it real quick, and then we're going to come back with a no note, straight from the Facebook group, and then Seth and I are going to tell you about a little experience we had last night.
Oh, it was fun
in the realms of trivia.
And in the realms of trivia, yes.
And then we won't tell them about the other experience we had
that
outside
one?
Of the realms of trivia.
Oh yeah,
and then we'll do a second round.
Okay, we're back. Guys, this week on the Facebook group, we heard from Ian about the curse of Tippecanoe.
Yes.
The curse of Tippecanoe. He writes, I know Mark Davis made a comment on a recent episode about how every time a president question comes up, he has trouble figuring out the order based solely on years. One trick that has helped me gauge where presidents line up to years they were elected is by the curse of Tippecanoe. Basically, it is a curse, quote unquote curse, where presidents were first elected on years divisible by 20. In other words, 1860, 1940, 1960, so on and so forth. They will and have died in office, with Ronald Reagan breaking the curse by surviving his assassination attempt. Always seems to help me when a year is given, and if you need to know a president, you can work up or down from a president's election year that died in office. I think that's very helpful, Ian, and there is definitely less presidents on that list. I think there's only 8 or so. So you can use those as markers for sure. That's a great mental marker.
Yeah.
The curse of Tippecanoe. It also kind of lines up a little bit with George W. Bush. There was an assassination attempt that he survived as well, and he was elected in a year divisible by 20, 2000.
In 2000, yeah.
The basis of the curse is as follows. In 1811, the Shawnee leader Tecumseh's forces attacked William Henry Harrison's army in the Battle of Tippecanoe. Tecumseh being the Shawnee leader. In an account of the aftermath of the battle, Tecumseh's brother, Tenskwatawa, a Shawnee prophet and resistance leader, reportedly set a curse against Harrison. This attack, by the way, was the catalyst for the War of 1812, as the U.S. blamed the British for supporting the Native American resistance movement by funding them with money and ammunition as well. So very interesting story. I had no idea anything about the Battle of Tippecanoe, much less the curse.
I didn't know about the battle. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm certainly going to be looking into that.
But he's right. Using the curse as a marker as to, you know, gauging back how far things go. You know, if you do remember those that land every 20 years apart that are elected, you know, I mean, what was the first one? Harrison,
1840.
Yeah. And then that 1840, that would put it at, Abraham Lincoln would obviously be the next, and then 80 would be McKinley.
Yeah, that's right.
Dead end. And then the next one would be 80 would be Garfield. Garfield died in office. McKinley. Oh. McKinley was assassinated. Garfield was assassinated. John F. Kennedy, which I don't think John F. Kennedy was elected in a even year. I mean, in a 0 year.
Let's see here.
Was he? Was he?
Yes, 1960.
Oh, wow. Okay, so this all fits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he was the last to succumb to the curse, Ronald Reagan breaking it in 1980.
Right. That's so wild. That is really strange.
Yeah, very helpful. You're right. It goes Lincoln, Garfield, McKinley, then Harding.
Harding, yes.
And then Roosevelt.
Right after Woodrow Wilson. Roosevelt, he was, of course, elected in 30. 40. However,
Franklin D. Roosevelt, 40.
40.
Mm-hmm.
But he was first elected in – no, he was – Franklin Delano Roosevelt was first elected in 1930.
So I think this is because he served – remember, he had like the split terms, right? He had 2 terms and then somebody else. And
no,
then,
he was a straight shot. He served 4 terms. He's the only president to serve more than 2 because we were at war. Of course, dying in April of 1945. They held him in office. They didn't want to, I think it was, they didn't want to have any elections because, you know, we were at war and they kind of wanted to just maintain things. He was first elected.
You're right. 32.
He was elected in 32, but then yes, he was elected again in 40. Mm-hmm. You're right.
So his is almost an exception as well because he served so many terms.
Right.
So it's
exactly.
Like if you restart him
yeah.
at 1940. that would work. Okay.
It is a good way to, you know, keep track of presidents, mm-hmm. though he's right.
Right. So indeed. That's good. We'll just have to take a little closer look at that chart, memorize it. We'll be good to go.
Right on.
So how did you guys did some trivia last night?
So Tim and Joey, Joey's sister Meg,
this
is involved with a roller derby team in the Pacific Northwest. named the Rose City Rollers in Portland, Oregon. And Meg happened to she's involved. She's the marketing manager of the team, and she plays. And they were going to host a trivia event. And the first and second place teams were going to win these, you know, big, like, prize baskets or whatever, worth $300-something, all this stuff. And so, of course, she tagged me in it, knowing that I do, you know, trivia all the time and trivia podcast, etc. And so, you know, I had just seen Seth, so I messaged Seth to see if he wanted to play, and I messaged Tim and Joey to see if they wanted to make a team of six. I was going to call you, but Joey told me, well, Tim and I were going to be on a team with Meg, her sister, and her brother, Timothy. So that would have put six right there. So I was like, all right, well, I guess we'll just do it, and I'll just have something to report back with. So sure enough, her brother and sister and Tim were fine with me and Seth being on the team. We did it via Zoom last night. At 10 o'clock our time, 7 o'clock their time. It was their first time doing this event, so it was insanity.
That's a nice word for it.
Yeah, so yes. It you know, they did teams of six, and they did some things very differently than the way I do them. They did these things called breakout rooms, which basically takes everybody in the main room and puts them in their own room to suss and discuss. But they basically had a Jeopardy-style board up with five topics and questions that were worth anywhere from 1 to 500 points. But instead of giving you like an option to choose, I'll take this for 500 or whatever, they just went through all five questions, bomb, 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 bomb.
Quickly.
They read each one quickly. And then threw you in your breakout room, and you had 2 minutes to come up with answers for all five. Yeah, your eyes, what they just did.
Yeah.
That is what my eyes did.
Wide open.
Yeah. That's just the beginning of the... Okay, okay. Go ahead, Mark.
All right.
Yeah, so, I mean, there was a lot of... and, I mean, Seth,
lots
you were
of
there.
Pressure.
So, I mean, there were a lot of... I mean, again, this was their first time, and overall, it was a lot of fun, and there were a lot of great aspects to it, but it was in... So, there were 80 people that signed up for this thing.
Wow.
80 cameras, 80 Zoom cameras. Accounts.
Yes, there were there were 80 people in this. There were three pages. It was just absolute fucking
bedlam.
Bedlam, yes.
It was bedlam.
It was absolute insanity. Some of the stuff I really liked the way they did it. You know, it kind of rode that okay, well, you know, here's Harry Potter, here's five questions. You know, that we were lucky enough, you know, we were on a team, but we were, I think, because they had so many people that they threw some other people on our team. Poor Seth got put on random teams three different times.
As Mark said, they asked you the five, was it five or six questions? I think it was five, six, I'm not sure, but, they ask you these five questions. You answer them. I mean, you know, in your head, you want to write them down on a piece of paper, and then they threw you into these breakout rooms, which is something I had never experienced on Zoom before. But you cut from one room to the other. One
You're
room
zoomed
is just
away.
The, right. One room is just the quizmaster asking the questions, and then you're thrown, which everybody's muted except the quizmaster, and then you're thrown into these rooms. Well. They were trying to get it sorted out for a long time before the game even started, who was going to be in what breakout room. And they just said, like, when the first round started, which was general knowledge, which I had, you know, I, like, had three answers, like, bam, like, right off the top of my head. I'm like, all right, we're going to get in this room, and we got 2 minutes for all six of us just to yell out our answers, and then we designated Mark to send back the answers through the chat window, right, to the moderator or the quizmaster. Nice. And, and it was, by the time they got it a little bit more worked out, it was kind of interesting. It was fun. It definitely was fun. However, because it was their first time, and they seem to have problems matching people to the correct breakout rooms. My first breakout room that I was lumped into just so happened to be a large group of families, all of them with children under 10. And when the breakout rooms were, you know, all of a sudden happened. I was thrown in with all these kids and parents, and the children suddenly were taken away from trivia to now I can show my cat to everybody on Zoom. So they all ran and grabbed their cats and started shoving them into the webcams as fast as they could go, and nobody's discussing trivia. So I'm like, oh, great. So I just sat there with my mic muted and thought, well, I just won't do any answers this round. So I sent a message to the moderator, you know, I need to be put in the same group with Joey's family and Mark. And of course, second round, didn't get in that one either. The second round, I was put in with a group of people that I had absolutely no idea who they were, and they just said, do you have any answers? I gave them the two answers that I knew, and then third round, it happened again, and it was just over the place.
This Paige was the young lady that was doing all this, who was apparently, like, pretty 12, young. 12,
yeah, or 13
and,
or 14.
And she, like, does this on some level, and I want to talk to Meg about having her on the podcast and seeing what was going on behind the scenes, because I can't imagine. 80 people? Like, yeah. I cannot Big fucking... Job. Cannot imagine. And
Seth is lost in the wind.
Well, we had to register...
naturally, yeah. I mean, you got that many people and you're doing these breakout rooms, you would hope that they have some organization going out.
Right. So Seth had registered and but he didn't get his link. Mm-hmm. So I sent him my link. So he showed up as me.
So there were two Mark Davises. Yeah, that was probably where all of this, started at. It was very confusing. I will say this though, it was the 2 minutes that you have to come up with questions, I think I was there for three or four rounds of the breakout rooms, and that was fun, Mark. When they got them sorted out, that was fun.
Yeah, almost sounds like trivia roulette.
It was less roulette once they, because the good thing was I was first kind of under the, thinking that they were going to put you in a team whether you liked,
whoever you wound up with.
Yeah, I was a little bit less for. But once they got everything sorted out, you had 2 minutes, which is still not a lot of time. And with lagging and everything, by the time everything, got sorted and you were in the room, you were, talking as fast as you could. I would get in the room and I'd be like, these are the answers I have. Do we agree with them?
Yeah.
Yes or no? And then it was like, okay, what are the answers for these?
I'll be honest, that got to be a little fun. That got to be kind of fun when I think about it.
Filtering through the answers.
Yeah.
Yes. The everybody yelling at each other, this is what I think it is. This is what I think it is. This is,
Then it would give you a countdown saying the breakout room will close in 59, 58. 57, and then you're sitting there going, okay, all right, the first woman on the cover of Time magazine for Man of the Year, who do we want to put, and you're like watching the counter click down going,
Wallace Simpson, by the way.
Yeah. I've got two questions, that I need to like get some kind of answer to put down to, and then you're thrust back into this big group and you hear the host going, okay, do we have all the answers in? Like, the other big problem was because there were 80 people, they had automatically muted everyone. So the only way to discuss anything with anybody was to type.
Yeah.
But you were able to type to everyone. It wasn't like mine where you only typed to the person taking the answers. But you only typed the answers to one person. So if you were typing to the answer person and then someone started like saying, all right, I'm going to give you the answers, you had no way to tell them like don't, other than just going –
freaking the fuck out on waving cam. Your hands wildly at the screen.
Exactly. So it was I know, especially because they had some technical difficulties to begin, they were trying to keep it very tight on time, very tight 2 minutes, and then as soon as you're out of your breakout room, they were like, give me the answers. I think part of it was probably to make it so people weren't cheating. Part of it was probably also just to like try and keep it on time. But I will tell you one thing. They did not like Seth and I. I mean, everyone there.
By the way, he forgot to mention we won.
Wow. We did win.
Okay. We won. Yeah.
I was waiting about that. I was wondering what our score was, and I actually texted Meg last night and this morning asking her what our score was, but I still haven't gotten it. A lot of these people know each other through either the Rose City Rollers or through the derby scene in general, or a, you know, derby scene adjacent in the Pacific Northwest. And then there's Tim and Joey in Maine, mm-hmm. who everyone knows because of Meg and Halsey, right. her husband. And then there's these two white dudes in darkened bedrooms, you know, in this, in these two quadrants, and
Raiders, trivia Raiders.
Seth kept mentioning that he wanted to win the Red Robin gift card, of which there was no Red Robin gift card available. He just kept mentioning it.
They listed a bunch of gift cards that you could win, that they, that were going to be prizes that they were giving out, and all of the places that they mentioned were like local businesses, like in the Portland area. And I was like, oh man, there's nothing on here we could win, but it didn't matter. We were there for the trivia and a fellowship anyway, right? So I'm just like, I, at the beginning, I typed in, I was like, gee, I hope I win that $3 Red Robin gift card. And every, and the quizmaster was like, there's no Red Robin gift card on here. So I just kept on playing it. I was like, you know, I'm gonna get, you know, I can't wait for those delicious fries at Red Robin.
Then, and, of course like, I started in two, like, oh, Red Robin, yeah, I love Red Robin, I can't wait to win this gift card. And they were just like getting more and more like, okay, already, like, with this, who are these fucking guys?
They had, so
at the end they unmuted everyone so everybody could say goodbye. Of course, as soon as they unmute it, Seth and I are just yelling. And they mute just Seth and I and let everyone else talk. Seth and I are the only two
people. I was saying the most
muted.
Inappropriate things I could possibly think of. Just and then she immediately just shut us down. I mean,
and I mean, was, you know, this is you know, Portland, Oregon. It is very PC. It is very, you know, and you know, not that Seth and I are not.
Well, half of the city is very PC.
Well,
and
yeah,
the other half is pure Nazi.
That's what. Well, yes, that got kind of brought.
We discussed that a little bit afterward. But yeah, so we did end up winning, and I, you know, I felt kind of bad because the person announcing was like, first place of course is Meg
people.
and her friends, because she brought these, you know, at some point someone mentioned like they referred to Seth and I as ringers and Tim and Joey as ringers.
And they accused us of cheating, which, you know, I mean, I'm not going to express that. Oh yeah. In the chat, a couple people wrote cheaters, and I'm not going to express it on Zoom.
Are two professional quiz masters that frequently appear on the trivia podcasts. I mean, ringers, really?
It
does fit the bill, to be honest.
I mean, it kind of fits the bill, and we won.
You guys are ringers.
That chat was the most wonderful chat I've been involved with in a long time. It was so much fun.
We had very good conversation afterwards with Tim and Joey and Meg, and you know, I asked if they plan on doing it again, and they said, you know, they'll probably be doing it again. We had a little discussion on ways that they could change it a little bit and make it so it was a little more palatable. And I said, you know, if you do it again, I don't know that we'll play again. It didn't seem like it went over very well. And it seems like it's more, it's less about the trivia and more about the camaraderie of like the people, you know, like when you have a work outing, you know, and then that one guy brings his like, you know, alcoholic roommate, and it's like,
two of them.
You know, did you have to bring Hank? You know, this is kind of a work thing. It seemed like it was kind of like, well, you know, we're not saying that it's only for roller
and
derby
Hank
people,
wins.
But it's kind of like for roller derby people. Yeah, right. But like, you know, then you go into this place with 78 screens of people with, you know, crazy frames and, you know, hair dye and, you know, clothes, this, that, and the other thing. Yeah, very like very Portlandia-ish. And then you see these two
Florida
white
men.
Guys wearing like white
Florida
wearing,
men,
like, literal t-shirts. Florida men.
Here comes. Yeah.
Are these literally Florida men?
Yeah, and I mean. Exactly. And I can see them being like, all right, are these guys here to like bomb us? Is this like a weird thing or what? And then it's like, no, we're just here to play trivia and kick
ass. You know, as I'm sitting here talking to you, I'm thinking about it. And it is kind of, you know, none of them except Meg and her family, you know, kind of knew who we were. And you might get the idea, oh, nobody knows who these guys are and they win. Okay, it could be, you know, you could think to yourself, yeah, maybe these guys cheated. They just came to ruin the game. However, if any of these people that were at that trivia last night do understand, ever hear this podcast, please know we take trivia seriously. I mean, yeah, pretty seriously.
Probably too seriously.
Well, yeah, really.
Shit, you're telling me? Look at us. Look at what we're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I guess, like, you know, I maybe took it a little bit for granted that because we knew Meg, that, you know, that was kind of our, you know, it would be one thing if we just signed up for... you know, some random trivia that we happen to stumble upon, but it was like, look, we're here with Meg. We're on her team. Like, how much, you know, she's been part of this organization for ages. Like, what more, do we need, you know, to be given the okay?
Well, your guys' shenanigans always welcome in the No Nonsense Trivia Twitch chat for sure.
There you go.
Thanks good. Thanks for bringing the report back, Mark, on that. If you would like to write us with a report of your virtual trivia, a missed correction, a rate my question, or even just a little no note, you can write to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com or find us on social media.
All right. You ready, Lee?
I'm ready. I'll go first this time.
Pop us off, Daddy.
Weird science. Weird science, the category. Which influential scientist was part of a glutton club whose mission was to sample rare meat?
Wow. Influential scientist.
There's only one?
Which one?
Well, who are you thinking, Mark?
Einstein?
Well, maybe. I kind of don't see it. You know, I just, when you say scientist, I'm imagining, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, you know, picturing Marie Curie, you know, like mowing down on some fresh braised camel. Or,
you know, I did think her.
Or maybe even, I just don't see Jonas Salk sitting down for a dinner of rattlesnake. You know,
What about Louis Pasteur?
That is, you know, because he did all that work with, you know, pasteurization and milk and stuff like that. I think that's a good answer, Mark. I think that's a good answer. Louis Pasteur. Because, I he's trying to get rid of that brucellosis, getting it out of, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, the thing about Einstein is that you wouldn't expect it, and I think that would be what would be cool about it. Is it would just be one of those things like he never wore socks, you know?
Did
like
he?
You know, just one of those like little known Einstein facts.
Yeah. Bits of factoids.
Bits of trivia. Yeah.
I think Pasteur is a good answer. I think that's a solid.
It could definitely
answer.
Help lead to pasteurization.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, hey, I'm in this group with, you know, that eats rare meats, and there's these, you know, he came up with pasteurization, which cleans up milk. You know, it gets rid of the brucellosis from milk. And, you know, maybe he enjoyed, you know, oh, I really enjoy drinking milk, but it's dangerous to drink. I could, you know, it could be undulant, and I, you know, want to clean that up. And, oh, I enjoy all these other meats, and what if these crazy diseases come out of meats? Oh, my God, I just realized what time we're living in.
Give me some slug dick.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do Pasteur.
That's our answer.
No. I'm sorry. You guys were kind of in the right territory. There was somebody who, a scientist who expressed an interest in the lives of animals that was also part of a glutton club. That would be Charles Darwin. Charles Darwin.
Oh, that makes sense.
He was on the hunt for two different reasons. One, to scientifically, you know, analyze different creatures of the world, as well as to eat them.
Oh,
so the Glutton Club—they had a couple different meetings. One of which ended when Charles Darwin realized what he was eating was the ree, which is like a small ostrich, South American ree.
Yes,
and he had been searching for this for a while and then wasn't realizing he was eating one, and he told everybody, stop. And he collected everything to go study immediately. Everything was gathered back up mid meal, wow. Box it all up.
Save those bones. Eating this. The Have you heard of this crazy bird? Yeah, you're eating it.
The favored dish was the agouti, which is a Central and South American rodent. It's like a 20-pound rat, basically. Darwin said that was some of the most delicious meat that he's ever had. Disfavored, the brown owl. Apparently, the brown owl tasted so bad that the group disbanded over it. They said, we're done. This is it. The last one.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
That is very strange.
It seems like you would do that because something is so good. I would like to be there in the room with the re-thing, though, because I would just like to know how that all went down, where someone, whether or not they were like, oh, what we're eating today is the re, and he was like, wait, what?
Yeah. Like, you know, I don't even know if they had a name for it or not. I'm not sure, you know, but it was whatever they were searching for. Just want to shout out Apple 30309 for that category. That was a category request for the trivia, but I totally just grabbed it for the podcast today because she just wrote Glutton Club, and I was like, Glutton Club? What is that? Like an anime? Sounds like an anime or something. So I type it in.
This leopard was so good.
Fascinating.
Seth.
Got to throw something World War II oriented at you guys. In what year was Churchill appointed prime minister? By the way, they do not elect prime ministers through the populace in Britain. You are voted in by parliament. Generally, whichever party is in power votes
now,
in.
I thought you were voted in by a Funkadelic. Was that later on?
Only if Bootsy is Speaker of the House, is presiding over the House that day, or the House of Commons.
I knew it was like the late 70s that they combined the two and made the Parliament Funkadelic.
Yes.
But I knew at one point they were two separate things. So.
Yes.
Speaking of funk and Afrobeat, just want to say rest in peace to drummer Tony Allen.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
A huge loss.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
This year for drummers, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Terrible.
But we got a new Nate Smith Fearless Flyers track.
Oh, my God. He went from bass drum, snare drum, hi-hats to like 8 concert toms.
Mm-hmm. A full Neil Peart set. Yeah.
A 3-piece sax section. Oh, my Christ. So good.
That, Winston that Churchill.
Thank you. Get me back on track. Because that is, that track is killer. I listened to it like 5 times in a row in my car.
What year was he appointed?
Was he appointed during World War II or in the beginning of? What do you think?
I think during. You know? I think he came in like a wrecking ball, basically, as the song goes.
He never
goes.
Swung so hard in love.
So let's see here. If that's true, we have a small window to choose from.
I used to think the lyric was, I never swang so hard and low. And then I heard something and it's hard and love or something like that.
A Mondegreen.
A Mondegreen. They never swung so hard and low.
Yeah.
What do you think? Early World War II? Not late.
Yeah, early, because he helped get them the fuck out of it, right? Mm-hmm. England was getting bombed pretty early on. When did World War II start?
39. Right? 39?
39 to 45.
I think. 38?
So 39 was... Is that like he starts taking over Poland? Austria?
I have no
38,
idea.
39. Let's say 1940 or 1941.
So Roosevelt, 1940. Roosevelt is just getting started on his third term.
Maybe. So he's 1940, which means.
Thank you, Ian.
Yes.
For the curse of the Tippecanoe already helping.
Already coming through. Maybe he came in with Roosevelt.
40, same time. Easy alliance there.
America's got this new guy coming in. This war is ramping up. Let's get Churchill in there.
1940. Let's do it.
Is that your answer?
Yes.
Yay! Yes. Very. That was another epic sus. Another epic sus. You guys were right in everything you said. 1939 is when Hitler invaded Poland. Technically, the start of World War II. And you know, yes, 1940. That was when he was brought in. He took over for Neville Chamberlain in May of 1940, and then the London Blitz started in September of 1940. Such a good job on that sus, guys.
I gotta tell you, good. Getting that right has made my fucking day.
Awesome.
Feels so good.
I don't know. Awesome. I don't know how the fuck we got that. Lee, I've never wanted to hug you so bad in my fucking life.
Fist bump through the Zoom.
Boom. God,
I do have to tell you that it is a bit of a trick question. You guys definitely got it right. However, he was elected to Parliament again when Labour came into power in 1951. So there was a stretch that he from 45 to 50 that he was not Prime Minister, but he was elected a second time from 51 to 55. So if you could have technically said 51 as well, and that would be right. But the answer I was looking for was 1940. Good job, guys.
Thank you, Seth.
Tasty.
Good Lee. Question. Is it me or is it you?
It's you because you started this round, right?
Right. Okay.
Then it's you. Or wait a minute.
I was going to say.
No, it's me. God, what the hell am I talking about?
It's Mark, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a silly goose. Pardon me for being so silly.
Why don't you go jump in the pond then?
Question number one of the second round. What American fashion model, who was featured in Taylor Swift's music video for Bad Blood, revealed in 2014 that she was diagnosed with Hashimoto's disease, which causes a gradual deterioration of the thyroid.
Mm. Oh, man. What was the video that she was involved in? Taylor Swift, what?
Bad Blood.
Bad Blood. Okay. Mm-hmm. Where is my daughter? She loves that song. Blood.
Now, there are many celebrity cameos in that music video.
I think so, yeah.
I think Kendrick Lamar is also featured on that track and makes an appearance in the video. Mm-hmm. The model, if I remember correctly, there might be a couple different models in the video, but one that I remember for sure is Cindy Crawford. I'm not as sure about any other models.
Is Gigi Hadid in that video?
She might be. There are a few people in that video that I can't remember the name of right now.
I can't imagine. I mean, well, Cindy Crawford, please don't think I'm bringing down Cindy Crawford, but it's getting a little long in the tooth.
That is why I remember it. That is exactly why I remember it, because I was thinking like, oh, cool, like Cindy Crawford is like in a music video again.
And knowing that would probably bring down the, maybe you get that disease late in life. What's it called? Hashimoto?
Hashimoto's disease.
Thyroid is a very common ailment in an older population. I mean,
it is.
Thyroid issues.
I have to have that checked when I go into the nursing home that I live at. It's outpatient lab, and I'm kidding.
Because you're a presbyotic,
or because I am presbyotic, or are you? Oh, are you,
Seth? I mean, it could be. I don't know. You said Gigi Allen. Is that who you said in a Taylor Swift video?
I didn't know he was a model.
Yes, Gigi Allen's video with Taylor Swift: drink, fight, fuck.
20 hours posthumously.
Yeah. I guess Cindy Crawford's as good as I said Gigi Hadid. She's a somewhat younger model. That's just a guess. I'm not sure. Cindy Crawford.
The whole theme of the video is like that she's going to like collect her angels to help her, you know, in her battle, action battle. So, I think she's like going for some iconic folks, you know.
She was taking one of those angels in for blood work to find out about their thyroid.
Bad Blood.
I never knew
that's what the song was about. That song was wasn't that a diss track, Bad Blood, with Katy Perry, or about Katy Perry? That was the rumor.
I believe so, yeah.
I don't know. I can't imagine the sweet Taylor Swift wanting to do a diss track, but I mean, anything's possible.
They had some beef.
Let's go with Cindy Crawford.
If you got beef, then bring some cutlets.
Okay, let's go with Cindy Crawford. We'll go with that one.
The correct answer is Gigi Hadid.
Oh, are you serious?
You've got to be kidding me.
I am dead serious.
Oh,
you've got to be.
God.
I am dead serious.
Who is this lady?
In 2014, her sister Bella Hadid, you may remember from the Fyre Festival documentary.
Yes.
She was flown out. And as a matter of fact, I tested this question on a friend of mine, Tracy, who is a huge Taylor Swift fan. She guessed another model and then another one. And I said, what if I said she has a sister? And she immediately said Gigi Hadid. And I said, then I know not to put that in there because I'm dealing with some. I'm dealing with some ringers. So I need to bring the tough stuff. And I did not include that Bella Hadid was on the Fyre Festival when she goes out to the island to take pictures and be seen on the island with Ja Rule and that other creepy, gross guy. But Gigi Hadid in 2014 and a couple times since has said that she has Hashimoto's disease, which can lead to hypothyroidism and can completely basically deteriorate your thyroid after time. So she came out to let people know.
Damn it.
She also, when Donald Trump banned Muslims, her and her sister went and were part of the
banned travel the New from York- Muslim countries.
Yeah, they went and were part of the New York protests for that. So,
well, best wishes to her, Seth. I am so sorry. I did
get
dirty. You gave me an answer in the first round, and I just took one from you. That was correct.
Right. Is it your question, Lee?
Yes, it is.
All right.
I have a '90s music question.
Here we go.
Guys. '90s music.
Two people that lived through it.
If you're looking for some 90s music this week and you're listening live on Monday, on Tuesday night this week, search for the 90s music from trivia from Shell Games Entertainment on Zoom. Mark and I think we're both going to be playing.
From Dallas and Elise.
Will you guys be on my team? Can we team up?
Yes.
If I get home from work in time, which I'm working late, I will play with you.
Beautiful.
I will.
I'll do it via phone with you if I got to.
Yeah.
I'll text message you. I don't give a shit.
Okay, that's fine.
Carrier pigeon, smoke signal.
I can.
To have Seth on my team for a 90s music trivia.
Coconut telegraph.
Absolutely.
All right. Here's a question from good old Quizmaster Lee, though, to whet your palate.
Okay.
Here we go.
What 1997 album by a Canadian artist is the best-selling album of the 1990s performed by a single artist?
Can you define performed by a single artist?
Every track on the album. It's not a soundtrack or a compilation. So every track features the main artist. The best-selling album of the 90s is a compilation album. That's why that's in there.
Seth, Jagged Little Pill?
Jagged Little Pill came out in 1995. 94. Okay. 94. It came out in 94. It's not Alanis Morissette.
Okay.
And actually, Lee, can you ask that question? Can you read that question to me one more time?
What 1997 album by a Canadian artist is the best-selling album of the 1990s performed by a single artist? So maybe that question needs a little rewording. I just want to clarify, not every instrument on the album is performed by one person. But the album itself is credited to an artist.
A person.
Yes, a person.
Celine Dion.
That's a much better answer because
I mean the thing is I don't know any of the names of her albums. That's my problem.
I don't either. I mean, I sold a ton of her records. There was one of her records, and I can't remember the name of it. I would have remembered it in '95 because I was working in a record store, and she was on the cover in like this flowing white outfit with a white bat. The whole thing was white, including the lady singing. It was just, I remember that, but that was 95. But, you know, 97, that's the year Titanic comes out. but I just can't for the life. And this was the best selling record of the 90s overall.
Yep,
more than Nevermind. More than the Red Hot Chili Peppers. More than.
Not including compilation.
Um, Well, let's think of Canadian artists.
97. So this she was did my put out a record that year. Junior year of high school. She had just put out fucking was My Heart Will Go On a record?
I don't know. I don't, but this
I
is,
mean, like,
this makes sense because that was everywhere. I mean, that was all over the place, and she might have put it on a record before it made it to the soundtrack. You know,
what was the album after? Was there an album after Jagged Little Pill that would have done as well?
Well, that was that one that she did that had Thank You on it, but that wasn't nearly as big as, right. And that might have been like all the way up to 99 or 2000 that Alanis Morissette did. That wasn't nearly as big as Jagged Little Pill. Jagged Little Pill was huge. I mean, that sold like hotcakes. That,
are you? I don't mean to question you, but are you sure Jagged Little Pill came out in 94, 95?
I am like 99% sure that it came out in 94, 95.
Jagged Little
95.
Pill came out at the same time as Nevermind.
Nevermind came out in 92.
Okay. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Bleach 91, Nevermind 92. I looked this up because we had that question last night. In Utero 93, 94 on, I mean, 95 Unplugged. In Utero 94. I can't remember. No, 93. So it was,
God, that Steve Albini letter about fucking In Utero when he recorded In Utero with Kurt Cobain.
Classic.
Where he's just like, I'm not going to take a cut of your sales. He's just,
yeah,
he
just
like,
has an engineering fee, and that's
pay
it.
Pay me like he's a plumber.
Just, yeah. He's just so fucking good, dude. Yeah. I just have so much respect for him.
He's got principles.
I cannot shake the idea that it's Jagged fucking Little Pill. I don't
it's
know
not.
Why I can't.
I mean, you're right.
I know.
I
talk
agree.
Me down. I'm glad
it,
you're talking me down.
It sold like hotcakes. When that album came out, like everybody, my cousins that were like totally immersed in country music all bought that record. Everybody, I sold that record to everybody. And
I
worked
from,
at Peaches in 94 and 95. And that's when it came out. I'm talking you down from that record because I know it. Otherwise, if I didn't sell that many copies of that record in that year, I would be guessing Jagged Little Pill.
Maybe it's Gordon Lightfoot.
Yeah. Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald Remaster, yeah. 97.
Of course.
Yeah, that's what it was. I'm going to say Celine Dion.
But it's what album or what singer?
What album?
Oh, shit.
See, that's what I was saying. Even if it is Celine Dion,
we don't
what
know the
fuck
album.
Is the name of the album?
I don't know. I don't know.
See,
and the reason that we're apprehensive about saying Celine Dion is because people from our demographic don't pay attention. However, at that time,
oh no,
Celine
no,
was selling
trust,
to the you know the soccer moms of the day like
especially
crazy,
especially because of My Heart Will Go On.
Yes,
that's why I was saying if My Heart Will Go On is going to be on Titanic, and that song is also going to be on this album. I mean, Jesus Christ, Celine Dion fans are buying the album,
but I don't know the
people
name
that
of the
just
record.
Want the song.
Yeah.
Could it be just called "My Heart Will Go On"?
That's yeah. Why not? "My Heart Will Go On."
All right, we're gonna say "My Heart Will Go On" by Celine Dion.
Wrong. Mm.
No, that's wrong. I'm sorry. Mm. There is no album called "My Heart Will Go On."
Is it Celine Dion?
By Celine Dion, and it is not by Celine Dion. As a final hint, I'll tell you this: it is a country music album.
Oh, Shania Twain.
Shania Twain.
Mm-hmm. Shania
the
Twain.
Album?
Shania Twain. Oh God, I can't remember.
Man,
I don't
want to like
take up your time. No, it's not that one. That one came out in 92. The one with "Feels Like a Woman" came out. Not. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. "Any Man of Mine" came out in 92. What's the one? It is the one with "Feels Like a Woman" on it. What's the name of that record? I can't
it's
remember.
Called
Go ahead.
Come On Over.
Come On Over.
Come On Over.
Yeah.
40 million sales claimed, copies claimed, 29 million certified.
Yeah. Okay.
Damn.
And it is the number one selling of album of the 90s by a single artist.
Oh,
the one that outsold it would be the soundtrack to The Bodyguard.
Yes, of course. Yes, that makes sense.
Prominently feature Whitney Houston, but actually is a various artist.
Right.
I was 10 years old when I found out Shania Twain was Canadian.
Oh, really? You didn't know that? She planted trees in Canada when she was a kid.
That's interesting.
And she has another name. Her name was a question on this. It was a Jamie question. Oh, man.
I may have known at some point and forgotten because I just didn't really care, you know.
But. Regina. Regina is her
name. I don't care about the number one selling artist of the 90s.
No, I don't care about Shania Twain, like kind of like in general. I mean, I think she's...
She's great in I Heart Huckabees.
She is.
As a minor character.
Hates mayonnaise.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing we have in common. What's happening now? Is it you?
It's Seth.
Yeah.
It's Seth.
Yes, it is. Okay. This is a quick, easy. Well, I hope it's easy. It was.
Oh,
me too.
I asked my wife this when she knew it off the top of her. Where is the painting Starry Night? I mean, I want the location of the painting where it sits today, not what's depicted in the painting. Where is it?
Mm.
And you don't have to be specific.
There are. I know that there are a couple different copies of it, right?
The copy, the one painted by Van Gogh, the first painted.
You
from,
want to know what city it's in?
That's fine.
The one painting of his was stolen from where he's from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
in Denmark.
In Denmark. Right? Oslo, Norway.
Oh.
Wait.
That's not where he's from, though.
Wait a minute.
He's not Norwegian. Isn't he Danish?
Was it... Who just had a thing stolen, like, right at the beginning of quarantine?
I thought it was Van Gogh.
Was it?
I think so. And I thought it was in Denmark.
I think that was Oslo, Norway, dude.
Well, that's not where he's from then.
But. Or maybe it was the Netherlands.
Oh, wait.
Oh, shit. See, this is what happens when you get so much shit in your attic. This is, dude, I've been, this is why I've been.
And you see how he dropped this is a little easy one at the front?
You're right. Well, I mean, obviously it could be the Louvre. Like, that's like the, mm-hmm. the.
Yeah. Old Paris. Duh. That would be the easy answer. Like what piece of art isn't in Paris?
Right. That like means a lot.
Obviously I'm being facetious, but
right.
That would make me remark as a quizmaster, like, this is an easy question. If I was looking at that question, that answer, I would go easy. But I don't know. We're metagaming now. You know, and you know, I don't like the metagame,
and you know, it's all I do, which is why we complement each other well. I don't know, Zaddy.
Could it be New York?
It could be the MoMA.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know if. I don't know if that would go in the MoMA. I don't know if that's modern enough to go in the
MoMA. Is that not modern enough? Maybe not.
It might be in the Met or...
The Guggenheim? What's the Guggenheim?
The Guggenheim? I don't think I've been in the Guggenheim, actually. I'm not sure if they have everything or just modern art. I think the rest of them kind of have a mixed grouping of artifacts to look at. New York would be a good guess just because there's so many major galleries there, you know. Could be in Chicago, but I doubt it. I've been to the National Gallery. Is the National Gallery, is that what it's called? No, that's in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Chicago's the Art Institute of Chicago.
No, there's a big one in Chicago. Is it the
Art Institute? I've been there.
Isn't there another one, or am I thinking of the Natural History Museum that's there?
Well, they do have the Museum of Science and Industry, which is right next to the Shedd Aquarium, like right on Lakeshore. Mm-hmm. But the Art Institute is the big one in Chicago.
Okay. I don't think it's there though. They have Nighthawks there, Ed Hopper's Nighthawks. I remember Nighthawks, Nighthawk, Nighthawks, Nighthawks.
Good old Eddie Hops.
Mm-hmm. And they also have Andrew Wyeth's Christine's World, another famous painting. I feel like if Starry Night was in Chicago, I would have seen it. on that trip as I was touring the major pieces. I'm cool with either New York, Paris, or somewhere in the Netherlands,
in Europe.
Amsterdam. Could it be Amsterdam?
You're the art guy more than me, man.
I think that one they kept in Europe.
You want to say Paris, or you want to say
Paris just by numbers? That's I think that's just our best guess.
Paris. We're going to go with Paris.
You didn't have to be specific. You could have just told me the city, even though that city has a whole ton of museums and art galleries in it. It's New York City at the MoMA.
It is at the MoMA.
It's at the MoMA, at the Museum of Modern Art. It's you guys earlier on when you were sussing through, you were talking about the one that was taken. There was a Van Gogh taken this year from Amsterdam. There was, I know, Mark, where I had it. It was right there. There was the one that you're thinking of that was stolen from Norway was Edvard Munch's Scream.
Yes.
And there are many of that one.
That is the one.
But the Starry Night is at the MoMA. And I have a picture of Jennifer, my wife, standing right next to it. I made her stay. You weren't supposed to take pictures of the art there, but you know, when we went there in 2006, but I made her stand next to it and like get a picture. And in the picture, she looks very upset because I was forcing her to do this. And she was like, I don't want to do that. You're going to get in trouble. And it's actually a very, very small, it's not a big painting. It's very small. And, but yeah, it's at the, if you would have said New York City, that would have been fine, but it's at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. And by the way, the Art Institute that you went to does have Wyeth, the Christine's Dream, which is a fantastic photo. It also has another one that I love called Hogs Killing Snakes. I can't remember the guy, John, he's a Kansas artist. A lot of great stuff at that one as well.
John the Leprechaun.
That's right. How did you know? But yeah, New York City. All right. There you go. And who's next?
I believe it's me.
Okay.
For the last question of this round, what cult, originally Texas-based, because everybody's all nuts about Waco, was founded by David Berg in the 1970s and used a method called flirty fishing that used sex to, quote, show God's love and mercy and win converts?
I think I know this one. Do you know it, Lee?
No, I was thinking maybe, you know, different cults that I can think of. Heaven's Gate. I know that started that came to a culmination in the 90s, but I think it started decades
Heaven's
earlier.
Heaven's Gate was but I think they were pretty much California the whole time. Mm. They might have been Colorado. I'm not sure. I think that this is the family.
Hmm. The family.
Eventually worked its way out west. Yeah, it was called the family. I can't remember.
Charles
I think
Manson's
it's,
family, or
no,
is this a different?
No, okay. not the Manson family. Just the family. Hmm. It was a big group that had it was one guy kind of grew his hair long, Howard Hughes style. He was real long hair, long beard. Had these beautiful women in the cult. Of course, that seems to be common of a lot of cults. I think it's the family. I'm pretty sure that's it.
Okay. Well, with my track record this episode, I'm not going to go against you whatsoever. So let's go with it. The family.
Good job. The family is correct. Okay. They go by a variety of names and gone by a variety of names, including Teens of Christ, which is how it started out. Children of God.
Yes,
was
Children
one of their
of
big names. The Family of Love, which was then shortened to The Family. Rose McGowan. Used to be a member
when she was
a child, as well as River Phoenix, Joaquin Phoenix, Rain Phoenix, and Summer Phoenix. They were all in Liberty Phoenix, their sister, from 1972 to 1978. They were part of their family was part of that group when they were very young. And Christopher Owens from the band Girls, as well as Jeremy Spencer, slide guitarist who was in Fleetwood Mac in 1971 and left Fleetwood Mac to join the family.
Wow.
Yes. So,
okay. I knew the guy from the singer in Girls grew up in a cult, but I had no idea that it was connected to this. I feel like this vaguely rings a bell. The family.
Oh yeah, man, Girls was so good. They were really good. I think he was based out of San Francisco, But I don't think the family was. But yeah, he did grow up in a cult. I didn't know that was it.
I remember there are a number of documentaries about them, you know, and people that grew up. And of course, you know, Rose McGowan talks about them at length in her, you know, an autobiography that she wrote. Yeah, very, very screwed up. They would basically have, and this is going to shock the hell out of you guys, but it was only female members that they would have go and fish male members with sex. I know that's shocking.
You're kidding.
That they didn't have males.
This might even be the cult that there's a Heaven's Gate podcast, and the host, it's hosted by the same guy that hosts Snap Judgment. And there's an episode where he talks about his own experience growing up in a cult, and I think that might be the same one. I think he refers to it as Children of God, though.
Yeah, I wanted to do something cult-wise because I know Waco is really trending. Right. And it's very funny because a lot of people watching Waco, you know, weren't alive and cognizant. Like Seth is kind of talking about with the 1990s thing. And last night there was a 1990s section of trivia, which I think we got every question in.
Yeah.
And someone was talking about how they were born in the 90s. And the host said, there's a difference between being born in the 90s and living through it. And, you know, I clearly remember a lot of that Waco stuff and them trying to play music to get them out and, you know, all the stuff they were trying to do to get the Branch Davidians out, you know, of the compound and all that stuff. So I wanted to try and find some other cult question that was, you know, Texas-based. And I was actually thinking about doing a question about Heaven's Gate, but they didn't fit the Texas section, unfortunately, so...
Right. There's other cults in Texas. There was a branch of the Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints where a guy named Jeff somebody, he was trying to set up a compound there, and they raided that compound and took all the children. And his name is Jeff somebody. Anyway, that was famous. That was just like in the early, you know, in the early 2000s. Texas, not cult-free. You can imagine that.
Yeah.
There's going to be some crazy folks there. It's kind of like parallel to Florida, you know.
All righty. I think it's time for another break, and then we'll come back. Do we have any questions to rate?
Oh, yes, we do. We have a recorded phone call-in question from Dylan.
Yes, now we're talking. All right, so let's take a break. Let's get our shit together and then come back and rate this question and do our final questions.
Right, we're back. It's time for a rate my question.
Rate my question.
All right, here's a call from Dylan.
Hey, Lee and Mark, it's Dylan. You guys said my rate my question last time was a little too easy, so figured I would hit you guys with one that's a little harder. Short and sweet here. What day was Julius Caesar assassinated on? Just looking for the month and day. It's a little hard, but it's definitely sussable. Good luck.
Yeah, this is sussable. This is just outright. That would be the Ides of March, March 15th.
Yeah, I knew that the Ides of March. I wasn't sure. I couldn't remember exactly what day
March 15th.
In March that was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lee?
I didn't know that. I thought maybe it would be like Hitler's birthday, like April 20th or something like that.
420? No.
Like, oh man, bummer day to go out on.
Yeah, no, I agree
Ides
with
of March 15th. March 15th?
Yeah. Yeah, that's okay. What it is.
Well, I mean, you sound pretty certain. I guess I could look it up just for
positive.
S&Gs, but okay. There we go.
Did you look it up?
March 15th, 44 BC.
44.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What a year.
Well, baby Jesus right around the corner.
44. Seriously. When that awesome album by Augustus Caesar came out. It was what a year. Remember it?
The Ides of March. Yeah. So as a rate my question goes,
well,
somewhat easy, I guess.
That's
I don't want to tempt the fates by keep going, hey man, pretty easy.
Yeah.
I learned that in high school. I mean, I
like I said, I mean, I definitely knew the Ides of March. Beware the Ides of March.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff. I knew that. You know, I'd give it a B.
A B.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with an easy question, but it could use a little flavor. It could use a little flavor.
Yes.
Even like what, you know, what date would was, you know.
He became emperor of Rome, put the Senate in a back seat, and eventually he was murdered by some other folks. What day? Mm-hmm. You know, some.
What historical leader was famously assassinated on March 15th?
Yeah,
that could be just flipping the answer, you know, maybe could make it a little bit more difficult.
Little things that you can do to like throw people off on it, you know.
Yeah. As it is, it kind of sounds a little bit like a test question.
Here's something interesting because I was wondering what Ides meant. In March, May, July, and October, the Ides fell on the 15th day. In every other month, the Ides fell on the 13th day.
Wow.
Okay. The word Ides derives from the Latin word meaning to divide.
Ah.
Well, maybe it's the middle of the month, you know.
So, divide.
You know. That must be where Ides.
Julius Caesar. Ide.
Mm-hmm. Oh. So, does divides mean to like separate into 10? Is that what the original meaning of that means? I mean, decimate, I think, is to reduce by to 10th.
Do you know where the decimate came from?
It's a it's like a Greek or Roman military term, right?
Yes, but do you know what it means? What it meant?
To reduce the quantity by 10?
Okay, here's what it was, is that every time that you had the Roman military, and if a legion or a unit or a column or whatever, you know, division they had of the troops was performed badly or lost or something where they were to be punished and they wanted it to be specifically severe, I think it was specifically for a lost battle, then they would line everyone up and they would take the 10th man and kill him. As punishment, meaning 10, decimate, kill every 10th. That's where that came from.
I see. Beautiful. I knew it had something to do with that era. I didn't realize it was a punishment component.
Yeah,
and when it was a punishment. I didn't mean like it was a good
like
thing.
Like how beautiful their death.
Seth, I know you're excited about your last question. Do you want to give it to us now?
Yes, absolutely. I'm excited. I like this question. I love it. In the book of 1 Samuel in the Bible, going back to that Bible, guys.
I'll read it one day.
The first king of a united Israel was King Saul. Not Saul who became Paul in the New Testament. This is King Saul, king right before David. King Saul wanted to marry his daughter Michal, M-I-C-H-A-L, Michal, and that was how it was pronounced, to the newly famous David of David and Goliath fame. King Saul told David he did not want a dowry for his daughter. Instead, David had to go fight the arch enemies of the Israelites, the Philistines, and return with 100 of the Philistines' what? He had to return as war plunder, 100 of something of the Philistines. Well, David wound up coming back with 200 of them instead. What was it?
Please tell me it was their dicks.
200 dicks? You wanted 100? We're having sausages tonight.
You want 100? Guess what? Guess what, Daddy? David got you 200. Let's go.
As ridiculous as that sounds, Mark, I'm really scared to talk you back on any answer at this point. This episode is not, I've not treated my susmates well.
Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's begatting everyone.
Mm-hmm. And how do you stop them from begatting?
I don't even
take
care
away
if they're
begatters.
Alive. I just want them to not be able to have kids.
Mm-hmm.
Let them live but not be able to procreate. And back then, isn't that even worse than death? Maybe their testicles? Maybe it's their testicles. That's why he has 200. He's like, I just cut off both of them. Double the pleasure, double the fun.
Yeah, I mean, it could be castration. That would certainly make this a pretty interesting question.
I mean, God has asked for some pretty fucked up stuff.
Well, this is King Saul, though. I don't know if this is from King Saul on behalf of God, like, or where he got the side. This could be a cautionary tale. You know, there's a lot of those Indeed. In there. Like, don't be with like this guy. Don't like take horses. Don't take other people's dicks, because you'll get your comeuppance. Could be one of those.
Right.
I don't know, though. I'm fine with that answer. I don't have a better guess. My initial thought was something like maybe livestock or something along those lines, but this is a quite a colorful answer. let's go with it.
We're going to go with penises.
I'll accept that answer because he asked for 100 but got 200 foreskins.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So this must be the.
He just wanted the tip of the penis.
Just give me the tip, but he gave him the whole thing.
All he wanted was the tip, and he got 200 of them.
So this must be the biblical origin of circumcision.
No, the biblical origin. Oh. The biblical origin of circumcision is that I think it was Father Abraham had many sons. Many sons had Father Abraham. I am one of them, and so are you. God commanded him to take him and his sons as part of their covenant to go off into the hills and cut their foreskins off. That was earlier in the Bible. It's just that, you know, the
Abraham's Israelites, towards the beginning.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But I mean, this was a little bit later on. You know, King Saul, in true Israelite fashion, said, "Hey, I just want you to bring me back foreskins." There's a Old Testament very foreskin oriented.
A lot of focus.
Well, he didn't want foreskins. He wanted 100 skins.
He wanted 100 foreskins. David brought him 200.
Brought back 400 skins? No. I just wanted the little bit, not the entire skin. And there's way too many.
You brought me back the whole flayed penis.
He wanted 100 foreskins to make a lampshade, I guess.
For anybody wanting to know where it's from, it's 1 Samuel 25.
That's why they call them Buffalo Solomon.
Buffalo Saul.
Yeah, there it is.
Buffalo Lee, Saul. What do you think?
Well, is it my turn or yours?
That's what I'm asking.
let's see here. Mine's pretty tough, I think. It's not impossible, but.
Well, why don't you go? Because I think mine's more sussable. We can go out on a good one if you guys get it.
Sounds good. Natural novelties is the category. Natural novelties. What mechanism that is known to have been invented and developed by ancient Egyptians and Greeks is presented in nature exclusively in the juvenile nymph bug?
What the fuck did you just say
to me?
Okay. What mechanism that is known to have been invented and developed by ancient Egyptians and Greeks is presented in nature exclusively in the juvenile nymph bug? This question, inspired partially by Mike's pharyngeal jaw, got me going down a track of weird nature. And this is just crazy. This is a mechanism, something mechanical, and it actually occurs in nature in the juvenile nymph bug. What is that mechanism?
So, but it was also created by the Romans and the Greeks.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Can I just ask you this and tell me if I'm asking too much? Is it something that is part of the juvenile nymph bug's body, or is it something that the juvenile nymph bug does with something in nature?
It's part of its body.
Part of its body.
It's part of its body. It's basically a machine.
Wow. All right. What are Romans famous for? Romans were famous for, you know, roads, making the original roads. And they had, you know, the reason that roads are of a certain design is the width of the wagon wheels that they used. They're known for aqueducts. They're known for, I don't know if Egyptians created aqueducts.
They're known for singing the song Wagon Wheel.
Are they? I mean, they are. I don't know. This is a very strange one. This is a very...
Think of something that a bug...
Nymph bugs. They skirt across the top of the water. They do. I know that.
Okay.
So
mechanical,
maybe
surfboard,
aqueducts are mechanical.
Dams.
No, I don't know if nymph bugs have anything to do with it. I'm guessing that it has to be something aqueduct oriented.
Here's a dumb question. What's an aqueduct? Is that just like a pipe for water to go through?
It's a way of moving water from one area to another using gravity. Aqueducts. Nymphugs are in the water.
What's aqueduct? Aside from a great Jethro Tull album.
That's Aqualung.
Aqueduct, my friend.
Right.
Ian. I'm going to listen to so much Jethro Tull today.
I can't think of anything else. There, you know, nymph bugs are, you know, in the water. That's where they begin their lives.
You said Greeks and Romans. Can I hear it one more time? I'm sorry.
Which mechanism that is known to have been invented and developed by ancient Egyptians and Greeks, respectively, is presented in nature exclusively in the juvenile nymph bug?
Plumbing.
Police. Plumbing. Like, I'm thinking
plumbing. They both did plumbing. What were you saying, Mark?
I know you're getting caught up on the water thing, and I understand where you're coming from, but I just can't think of anything that this juvenile nymph bug does with water that other things wouldn't.
Water pressure? I don't know.
Yeah, man. I don't know. I'm getting close to just... I'm trying to think of other like I'm thinking mechanical things. I'm thinking like pulleys. I'm thinking like levers. I'm thinking like things like that. That's like where my brain is going to right off.
Maybe it has something to do with pressurizing water, or you know, like a hose, like a nozzle or something, like a hose nozzle.
Like, you want to go with pressurizing water?
I guess. Yeah.
We'll go with pressurizing water.
I'm asking for a mechanism.
An aqueduct? I don't know.
What about like a water silo or something? I don't know.
A siphon. No.
Well, you could siphon?
Yeah, but siphoning is using I don't know. A siphon. A siphon or an aqueduct. Either one.
We'll go with an aqueduct.
I'm sorry, guys. That's wrong. The correct answer is functioning gear system. A functioning gear system. Interlocking teeth on the bug's powerful hind legs work to aid navigation. They're so strong that these teeth make sure that the bug's legs jump at the same time so it doesn't go like off one way or the other.
Totally like, the wrong way on that golf question. Ball.
I like to call them butt cogs, personally.
That's why I kept thinking that like with mechanical it had to be something a little bit more.
Yep.
But I would never have gotten that.
Sorry, Mark.
Isn't that crazy though? A bug with gears on its body?
That is very insane. Yeah.
That is weird.
All right, here's your last question from me. In what year did Brian Williams replace Tom Brokaw on NBC Nightly News?
Okay. That's a good question.
Thank you.
Okay, I think it had to be it was around 2001. I don't think Tom Brokaw was on the Nightly News on September 11th. I think that was around the time that Brian Williams took over. So I'm 99 2000 98 99 2000, something like that. You don't think so?
No, I'm shaking my head yes. I'm shaking my head no, but I mean yes. I totally agree, actually.
I'm going to say 2000, maybe.
2000 is a nice round number for him to to say, I'm going out. You know, I've been doing this for so long.
It's an election year.
Until I get to 2000. Yep, good time to transition over. And if we can metagame a little bit, Mark does love anniversary questions. Mm. It's 2020.
Yeah.
Here we are. 20 years later from that. So I feel good about 2000.
That feels right. That feels about right. It's around that time. I know that. So you want to go with 2000?
Let's do it.
2000. We'll party like it's 1999 and make it 2000.
Let's see what we've got here. That is incorrect.
Oh.
I was trying to find, I found a thing of Tom Brokaw in 2001.
Oh.
on top of the talking on the day of the 9/11 catastrophe. But
what year was it?
The correct answer is 2004.
Oh damn, we were way off.
Yeah,
2004.
Damn. Ugh.
I remember. Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing him when I was a kid, but
yeah,
I don't know. 2004. His last 4 years were basically my 4 years of high school. I wasn't watching the nightly news.
We watched Dan Rather in our house. You know, he was from Texas. My dad was just a Dan Rather fan, so that was who we always watched. But yeah, 2000. Damn.
I know a question before. Tom Brokaw, was he not the only person that covered the falling of the Berlin Wall? Was it him?
He was the one that was – it was famous because he's standing right in front of it when all the people were hitting it with hammers and stuff. I do remember that. Yeah. But, I mean, everybody – you know, back then that was – ABC was Peter Jennings. CBS was Dan Rather, and NBC was Tom Brokaw, and they all covered it. But, you know, I think that the famous video is Tom Brokaw standing in front of it.
I believe like the day it went down, he was the only one there.
Yeah, I think he was.
I think that
not
was
100%, but that's the
what a
that's
scoop.
Yeah, well, seriously. Tell
yeah,
me
kind
about
of a
it.
Big deal. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Seth, thank you so much for joining us here on the No No once again. We love having you on. And sorry again about pulling you away from some of those correct answers you had.
Oh, man, don't even worry about it. You know, I love coming here. This is fun.
You deserve a better susser.
Oh, no. No. It was just the luck of the draw, man.
Touche. Au revoir.
Bon voyage.
I don't know. I'm just saying different things now. Mark, thanks for the wonderful questions. Great to see you guys here on the Zoom.
And to you.
To everyone else, that concludes this episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. My name's Quizmaster Lee. Follow No Nonsense Trivia on social media and on Twitch for upcoming quiz stream. Thank you for listening. Join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the No-No in several ways. The easiest by sharing this episode on your social media accounts with your friends. You could also leave us a written review on your favorite podcast platform. We always appreciate that. You can support the podcast on Patreon by visiting our website, thenono.com, and clicking the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page.
Thank you so very much to all of our Patreon supporters. You're like our sugar daddies, but for being able to do trivia without inundating you with a bunch of stupid ads. Thank you first and foremost to our quiz daddies, Dylan, Tommy, and Tim. Thank you guys very much. Also, thanks to our team captains. Gil?
It's Gil.
Gil.
Yes. Kristen, Fletcher, Rachel, Aaron, and David, Holbrook. Thank you to our proverbial lightkeepers. Caitlin, Manu, Mo, Nina, Michael, Matthew, Luke, Marissa, Justin, Hank, Nicole, Cooper, Sean, Carly, Chris, Elise, Josh, and of course, Lucas the Luca Money. And thanks to our Rumpelsnailedskins, Allison, Paige, Kenya, Jeff, Efren, Steven, Michael C.
Michael Clean It Up.
Michael Cloaca.
Michael J.
Michael, just stay in a bit longer, please.
Seth, you got a Michael J for us?
Michael Justine Bateman. I don't know. I have no idea.
And Michael S.
Michael, stay safe.
Michael, satisfied.
Yes.
Yes.
If you'd like to write us with a rate my question or a miscorrection, you can do so at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com, or please give us a call at 1-929-356-6966. Just go ahead and put it in your speed dial right now. I know you've got a lot of contact spots in your phone open. Just go ahead and open that puppy up right now. Put this number in, 1-929-356-6966. Leave us a little message. We'll play it on the podcast here. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at No Nonsense Trivia, and on Twitter at No Non Trivia, and on Twitch at No Nonsense Trivia on there.
And guys, this Facebook group, I'm telling you, it's growing every day. We've had like one person joining every day, it seems like, lately.
Beautiful.
And we really appreciate it. A lot of great stuff coming, both from people we're having on, from people that have been doing our trivia, as well as other people that have been joining. Just go on Facebook and search for the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast to join us there. And finally, please, I know you're going to have to go to back to work soon, so now's the time to do it. Don't forget to leave us a rating on your favorite podcast service.
Five stars only.
Please. Until next week, have a fantastic quarantine.